This is Raphael Kushner, and I am delighted to be able to welcome in dialogue Dr. Judith Orloff. Judith, welcome.
Thank you.
So every time I do a dialogue with any teacher in the realm of personal growth or spirituality, I love to start by coming into presence, which is something that I do with all of the people at my workshops or my clients. So I figure we teachers should do it too. So I just want to start and say in this moment, I notice I'm feeling a little nervous energy. I'm feeling excited. I'm enjoying the fact that I get to talk to a colleague who I've traveled nearby but never actually met directly. So I'm pacing around my office in a kind of an enthusiastic gait. So that's me in this moment. How about you?
I'm surrendered to this very second, this moment, to you, to listeners, to the sky, to the universe, to the ground, Father, Mother, sky, earth, connected from foot to head.
Beautiful. Thank you. And again, a welcome and gratitude to you for agreeing to have this conversation with me. And I want to start also with a kind of a transparency, because the theme of your new book, as well as the theme of your check-in, is surrender. And I want to share with listeners my own surrender, because in preparing for our talk today, I read your new book, which is filled with all kinds of wonderful teachings, and I had my notepad and my pen ready to write down all the things that I wanted to talk to you about. And somewhere in the middle of reading your book, I just had this dawning realization that it was important for me to surrender all of that and just to show up trusting that we have a lot to talk about and we have a lot to share together. So rather than putting together my list or even, you know, God forbid, sharing it with you beforehand, we're completely in the wide open today. We haven't talked about what we're going to talk about, and I haven't planned it. So that's
Uh-oh.
My transparency.
It's my most favorite way to be.
Good, good, good. Well, the first thing that I just want to ask you about is something that comes up for me so often when I'm talking to people. It is the definition or the way of understanding surrender that is the most helpful. Now, your book is called The Ecstasy of Surrender, and many people have a hard time with surrender because to them it sounds either like resignation or giving up. So I wonder if you could just share with listeners from your point of view what you mean most specifically by surrender.
Yeah, so I'm redefining surrender. I don't mean it in that old antiquated sense of weakness or failure or giving up. I mean it in the deepest sense of connecting to flow and listening to your intuition and knowing when to surrender to someone, to a situation, to moving forward in your life on a certain path, and knowing when not to surrender to it, and knowing when the door isn't open, and regrouping and going another way. And so it's a deeply reverent stance to the divine energy, and I consider that the life energy, and learning how to tune into that on a daily basis. This isn't esoteric at all. If you feel moved to do something, then you go for it. There's a flow, and then the universe will conspire to help you. Various things will come in your path if you're surrendered to the flow. If you just want something, if it's just your desire and you really want to push, but the flow isn't there, it won't happen. And so at that point, you know, my definition of surrender is knowing when to move forward and knowing when to stop, pause, regroup, or back off. So it's a flow of life. I mean, life is a river. It's not static. It's not solid. And so when we can attune to that motion of life, wherever it leads, I mean in the most mundane aspects to, you know, the grandest aspects. You know, I'm a big lover of the mundane personally. That's where I get my greatest joy. So to be able to tune into the minute you wake up, your breath, the light, where you're going that day, who you're interacting with, and surrendering to that flow rather than struggling with life, rather than fighting everything, rather than clenching when something goes wrong or somebody lets you down, or, you know, inevitably life is challenging. but to learn to flow through those periods instead of making yourself sick or getting overwhelmed constantly.
And so I just have to come back to something that you said, which I'm sure that other people listened to too and wondered. You said that you're a fan, or one of your favorite aspects of life is the mundane, which also would, you know, kind of give people pause. So can you say a little bit more about that?
Oh, yes. It's the little moments that delight me. You know, it's waking up, it's seeing light, it's being with friends, it's going to the beach spontaneously in the morning and watching the dawn. It's the smile of people. It's the spiritual teacher that's right in front of you now, which is the person who's right in front of you now. It's not, doesn't have to be a big guru. It could be the electrician. It could be the gas station attendant. It could be your spouse. It could be your friend. But every interaction, you know, the little things. I'm an introvert, and I'm very quiet, and I require a lot of alone time. And so I love, you know, just any interaction. If I have too much activity, it's not good for me. I don't like it. It burns me out. But the smallest little things, you know, watching everything, slowing down time, that's what the book's about. How do you slow down time and get into, really dig the moment, whatever it is? And I always suggest to people, and this is, I recommend in the book, every day look up at the night sky and the heavens and remember that we are tiny little specks in this wondrous universe. We're not just about looking vertical, you know, or, you know, looking horizontal. We're not just looking at the earth. We have to look up. We have to keep everything in perspective. And the last chapter of the book is on the final surrender, which is death. And I believe that for people to find true happiness and peace in life, they have to come to peace with the final surrender of our physical body at this point. You know, not just have it be one big surprise at the end, but, you know, to get used to the idea this is the path for us all. It's an appointment we must keep, and you can't not surrender to that. So in that chapter, I have a meditation where I take people into death, what death feels like, so they're not afraid of it anymore. And that's so essential in being happy now.
Wonderful. I had an interview series a couple of years ago called Teaching What We Need to Learn, in which I asked people to share their own growing edge. These were leaders in personal growth and spirituality, the places that they weren't teaching about, but the places that they were working on or challenged by in their own life. And one of the people I interviewed was Dr. Dan Siegel, who I guess is one of your colleagues at UCLA.
Right.
And he was really, he offered such a beautiful gift because his father had just died the week before our interview, and he decided to go ahead with the interview anyway. And one of the things that he said that always stuck with me is that his father, who was a very scientific and rational-oriented person, was becoming afraid as he was nearing death in the last hours. And what Dan said to him was, where you're going is the place where you were before you were born. And I don't think that you ever were scared of that place. You never look back with fear at that place. And so perhaps you could recognize that you're returning to that very place. And it gave great solace to his father, and it was really moving to me as well. So I wanted to share that with you and just see how it may resonate with your own understanding and your own teachings about death.
Yes, totally. And when we're born into our body, you know, we're dumbing down our consciousness to fit into this physical form. So the great thing is about passing over is that your consciousness expands and it becomes larger than the necessary restrictions of the body. So it is very cool and very exciting and nothing to be afraid of. It's the final surrender. But I don't know why in this interview I started with that, because the book ends with that. It doesn't start with it.
Well, you know, I also, I was talking to Ram Dass in that interview series, and one of the most popular moments was when I was telling him that I always thought that how one would die would share would show a lot about one's personality or what we thought about when we died. And I told him that I always had this fantasy that when we died, that we got to have all the questions answered that we never got answered in real life. Like, you know, that woman that rejected me when I was 23 and said it wasn't you know, me, it was her. Was it really me after all? And he laughed and he said that, oh, it's much better than you think, Raphael, because not only will you get to know the answer about that woman, but you'll actually be her as well. So he offered a great gift. But I want to move on because, like you say, that's just the last chapter of a very big offering in your book. And I want to come back to the subject of surrender in a particular way, because I think how you're redefining surrender is really important. So often when we think of surrender, it has a feminine or receptive quality to it, and we think of assertion as having more of a masculine, not male or female, but just those different energies that we all have within us. And one of the things that's unique about you is that you are this, you know, beautifully surrendered, free spirit, and you write about this a lot in your book, but you also have a great history of achievement in a very left-brain world, at a very high level. You teach, you practice in all of these ways that one could not do if one wasn't really a go-getter, really good at getting stuff done, at prioritizing, etc. And so I'm wondering how you think of the qualities of assertion and receptivity in terms of your new definition of surrender.
I surrender to it. I surrender to all parts of myself, the physician, the scientist, the one who can analyze data, the one who can think in linear terms. I love it, and I surrender to it, but that's not all of me, and that's not all of anybody who's listening. We have so many other parts, and that, you know, being in the world, asserting yourself is traditionally male. And I don't mean that in a retro, you know, misogynistic way. I mean just in terms of energy. You know, the male energy is very different than the female energy. The female is very receptive and radiant. It's like the egg. When you see, you know, the egg, pictures of the egg, it's like radiant and waiting with those tiny little sperm coming, you know, millions of them and only one penetrates. So that aggressive sperm-like energy with the radiant feminine egg energy, which we each have both inside of us. But for many years, I was more in the masculine energy because I was going through medical school. And, you know, you really, it's harder to be feminine in that context because it's so demanding. You have to be so on your toes and you don't get much sleep and you're life and death and you've got to think, you've got to act. And, you know, I was thrust into selfless service as a psychiatric resident and a medical intern. And it was an incredibly illuminating experience. But now at this phase of my life, I have more luxury to be in my feminine side and to really play with that and flow with that. And it's totally different being in the world and feminine. But I can shift into analytic side. I love it. But it's just ultimately it's not as satisfying for me because it gets very boring just staying in my head. And I can't go to linear lectures anymore when someone is just talking from their head. I'll fall asleep. It's just too boring for me. I need to have somebody who's present in their body and a certain energy happening to keep my interest.
Mm-hmm. Got it. Okay, thank you for that. And I want to go on to one other thing in connection to the title of your book. It's not just called surrender. It's called The Ecstasy of Surrender. And I know that there are some people listening who would say something like this. I have been brought to my knees in surrendering. It may have been the hardest thing I've had to do in certain circumstances of my life, but the last thing I would call it was ecstasy. And I'm wondering if you can talk about that, because I think, you have a lot to share about why it's ecstatic for you and how it could be ecstatic even in the face of things that seem impossibly painful to surrender to.
Oh, what a great question. Well, there's a whole range of ecstatic surrenders, from orgasm to a belly laugh to falling asleep to dying to the crisis-oriented trial-by-fire surrenders that brings you to your knees, but ultimately the bliss of change. You see, so it's the release you get from surrendering and the growth can create ecstasy. And if you look at, you know, like orgasm, what that is, if you don't surrender to it, it's not going to happen. It just isn't. You know, if your head gets in the way. But when you can release to orgasm, I'm talking about physical, mind, body, spirit orgasm, you know, it gets you to a larger place. And the same principle is true in life. If you can surrender without resistance to what's happening in life, even if it's painful, it ironically brings a sense of bliss with it, if you can go with that. You know, if you don't resist it, the resistance is what causes pain. And so the surrender, like, can I give you an example? Like, when I was writing this book, I had to move out of my condo where I wrote all my books. I was stable. I lived in the same place forever, like 20 years, and suddenly I was forced out of it by construction and noise. And as a result of that, I had to sell my house, my condo, and I chose to give up all my possessions, so I had no possessions anymore, and kind of lead a nomadic life. And to my mind, you know, I said, oh, my God, this is, like, unbelievably, you know, hard. But to my spirit, I felt an unbelievable release. And I physically changed as a result of the experience. I look better. I feel better. I've changed in so many ways as a result of surrendering the old. And recently I got evicted from my office of 20 years that, you know, and I had to get out in 30 days. So it's like a surrender. I could make that miserable for myself, or it's like the last phase of surrendering the old energy in my life. It's like a clean sweep now. So it depends how you view it. For me, since I wrote a book on surrender, I've had so many challenges with it because it's what I've asked for myself, because I believe in the ecstatic bliss that comes from shedding the old and being your fullest self. And sometimes that means giving up old patterns and or old securities, like my home. You know, I'm a Cancer, so I'm a nester. You know, I had to give up my home, my office. I gave up a boyfriend. I gave up a therapist. You know, I gave up so much as a result of writing this book, and I can't tell you how much freer I am as a result.
I got it. And it's interesting because as you were talking, you shared the phrase, the bliss of change, and then you also talked about giving up old patterns. And that leads me to another question I want to ask you. In our world, the world of personal growth and spirituality, there are many people who talk about changing old patterns and old belief systems, etc. And one of the things that I found in wanting to be really honest about that with people is that the way that a pattern shifts isn't from black to white. In other words, if you always attract the partner, you know, who's going to bring up the deepest wounds from your childhood, and then you see the light and you do the healing, it's not like you walk into the same party and you naturally are attracted to, you know, the best possible, healthiest person for you. My own sense of it is that you'll still zoom like a heat-seeking missile to the attraction that's part of your earlier conditioning, but now you might have some space. You might have some awareness and choice, and you might say, oh, there's that, but what else is here for me? And even if you go to something else that's new, it won't feel like genes that fit yet, because it is a big process to be able to really replace that old conditioning with something new, a new way of being. So I kind of think if I take that all the way, you know, I want to tell people that those patterns will still show up even after you've done the deepest healing, and your freedom is in what you get to do with those patterns. But it would be a false promise to sell you to say you're going to literally break those patterns and be a completely different person in relation to them. And I'm wondering if you share that view, or if you have something more or different to speak to that.
I do share that view, and surrendering old patterns is an ongoing process throughout life that I so support people in. And like one of the patterns that I had was being attracted to unavailable men that I've had to shed, or somehow they're unavailable to me or not really there to show up. You know, it's been a long time pattern like that. And what happened was when I was writing the book, I fell in love with yet another one, and he dumped me in the most horrible, painful way. And I was on email. And so I was in it was horrible. And I was in excruciating pain, and my friends got tired of listening to me. And then I had a light bulb that I should work with some tantric male teachers to help change that pattern. And indeed I did that, and in fact fell in love with one who I've been in a primary relationship with for quite a while now, but and who's available, you know, who's like available and a loving partner. So I chose that process of purification through tantric exploration and actual physical, you know, transformation of touch and vaginal orgasm and letting go of old patterns for me to get there. So I kind of took an interesting path. It's not for everyone, but it worked incredibly for me. And that helped me on a physical level. I mean, my surrender was surrendering my therapist because I couldn't sit around and talk about why I'm not attracting men, you know, the right men to me anymore. I'd been doing that for years, and it wasn't working. So I surrendered to another path, and it was very unusual and, you know, kind of risky, but I did it, and it has, you know, transformed me. I couldn't imagine, you know, if I wasn't with this guy anymore, I couldn't imagine going back and being attracted to unavailable men after I've experienced this. Mm-hmm. It's very different to have a real-life partner who's there for you and is there with you beat by beat. It's very different than being with unavailable men. So that was my own process of surrendering that pattern, and there's a section in the book on letting go of negative patterns such as being attracted to unavailable men, toxic relationships, obsessive thinking, you know, all of that that so many of us get caught up in. But I wanted to give people strategies and tools on how to do it. I mean, it's fine to say, like, go of a negative pattern, but how do you do that? What are the steps? And I wanted to present that to people because it certainly worked in my life. And I'm very results-oriented, so if something doesn't work, I don't have any patience for it. You know, and so I wanted to share the tools in this book that have really worked for me and my patients.
Wonderful. So I know our time is limited, and I just want to ask you two more questions. We're talking today about your brand new book, The Ecstasy of Surrender, but your previous book, very popular, is called Emotional Freedom, and the subtitle of the book is Liberate Yourself from Negative Emotions and Transform Your Life. And this is where it's really fun and interesting for me to ask you a question, since we both are out there supporting people in being more emotionally intelligent and more emotionally connected. And from the perspective that I come from, I think that all emotions are there to be felt, and so we can get trapped if we label them as positive or negative. Usually something that I would call negative would be our resistance to any emotion that arises. So I wanted to get a chance to hear, since we teach next to each other sometimes, but we haven't ever gotten a chance to talk about this, what do you mean by negative emotion?
Well, the difficult emotions. In the book, I divided it up into, you know, a number of them: fear, frustration, anger, depression, anxiety. You know, those are just a few, and how to transform them. I agree with you. It's good to feel emotions, but it's not good to wallow in them. And I present in that book, Emotional Freedom, as emotions as energy and how to work with the energy of fear to transform it. And I don't believe that we can afford to live a fear-driven life, you know, if you're interested in awakening. And fear comes up over and over again, and it will throughout a lifetime. And people have to have the tools to learn how to handle it so it doesn't consume you.
Would it be accurate to say, in terms of bringing both of the books together, that if you have a lot of fear that you want to transform, you first have to surrender to it, and then you can move through it and beyond?
Little by little. That's a kind of a generalization, like when patients come to me and they say, I've been abused. You know, and yet they're not quite ready. They don't have the strength yet to go back to experience that abuse. I would work on their strengths first and then enter the fear. I have extreme respect for fear, but you can't just willy-nilly go in there a lot of times. You've got to get yourself strong enough to deal with certain things. And
right.
So
so ironically, in that situation, something to surrender to is where you are. You may actually need some new strength before you're ready to surrender to something that is important for you down the line.
Yeah, you've got to use your intuition. I'm an intuitive, so I work as a psychiatrist, and I also read people with my intuition. And I teach people to develop intuition. That's very key to surrendering to life in many ways. And so I always tune in to whether it's appropriate at a time to get into certain things. I mean, I think a lot of therapists, you know, who are well-meaning, go into, like, really gnarly areas with people at the wrong time. And that won't work. You know, they become overzealous about entering the fear areas, the fear zone. And I, you know, I've dealt with enough fear in my own life, and I've worked with, you know, enough patients over the last 20 years where I have deep respect for fear. So I tune into the proper timing of when to deal with what. And sometimes now is not the time. So just because you're afraid of something doesn't mean you have to go into it. But if you notice on smaller levels that fear is stopping you, like fear of success or fear of intimacy, not smaller levels, but, you know, more less than abuse maybe, then, you know, I suggest every day you make a list of 5 fears and see what's stopping you and how they're clouding your intuition, and to learn how to tell the difference between intuition and fear. They're very different. Intuition is either compassionate or neutral. Fear has a total, you know, emotional charge to it that throws you off, and it's hooked into your, you know, traumas of the past. It's very mm-hmm. different.
Got it.
Yeah.
Okay, well, the last question, and I feel like, you know, we've packed a lot in a short amount of time, so
yeah.
I really appreciate the richness of what you're sharing. The last question is the one that was so important in that interview series I mentioned called Teaching What We Need to Learn. People really love when teachers are willing, to whatever degree they feel comfortable, to talk about where they are now or what they're working on now. And your book has wonderful stories, many, many anecdotes, not just of clients and patients, but of your own in terms of moving through things. And you've already shared you know, earlier in our conversation about challenges that came up that you surrendered to during the writing of the book. So
right.
Let's end with right now. Where do you feel is what you would call perhaps your growing edge on your journey?
Intimacy and all the fears that come up for me and the critical maternal voice that comes in that can destroy my relationships. I had a very critical mother with my boyfriend. She never accepted any of my boyfriends if they weren't like Jewish doctors from a country club. And
mm-hmm.
I never went for that type. So, you know, she was enormously critical. But I notice in, you know, in intimacy, her critical voice comes in my head, you know, and I could tear apart anybody. You know, any man I'm with, I could find something wrong with them, you know, or wrong or whatever. So I am really working with that voice to quiet that voice and realize it's not the truth, and to try and surrender old mother habits that infiltrate my being and that are so painful, and I so don't want them to sabotage me again. I feel like crying now. But it's very hard for me when they come up, and I'm working with it the best of my ability.
Well, I really appreciate your vulnerability in sharing that. It's very moving, and when you said it's very hard for me in those moments, I just completely empathize, because it's almost like a trance that takes us over, and to have the awareness in those moments that, first of all, this is what's happening. Second of all, if I resist it, it's only going to get stronger. So how do I be with it in a way that, coming back to your language from before, actually transforms it rather than feeds it? I think every day I talk to people who can totally relate to that challenge. So I think it's really important. I really honor you for sharing that, letting people know that as far along on your journey as you are, that kind of critical voice could arise and could be, as you said earlier, you know, the spiritual teacher that's right in front of you.
Absolutely. And that's how I want to live. But when it comes up, you know, it's something for me to work with. And, you know, when you said somebody as developed as me or whatever, you know, we're all equal. I mean, challenges keep coming up. That's the earth plane, you know. And I want intimacy. I want to love more than anything else. And that desire to love is more important than anything else to me. And that fuels my passion for letting go of the fear or the critical voice. But it doesn't mean it's easy.
Right, right, absolutely. So, Dr. Judith Orloff, great gratitude to you today for spending a little time with me and my list of people and sharing not only about your new book, The Ecstasy of Surrender, but also just from your own heart about your own path. It's been lovely speaking with you today.
Oh, thank you. It's been so lovely speaking to you, too.